Hello and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. My name is Erin Bowles. I'm a writer, actor, and for now, I'm building a big old dollhouse. It's a new phase of my life. Our guest today is Emily Caulfield. She is a creative producer, writer, artist, newly landed in LA. She's from the East Coast. I think we're from the same county, we learned.
Yeah, my Montgomery County, right?
Yes, Montgomery County, and she's been white knuckling it since 1982. Welcome.
Hello, here I am.
I'm so excited. Today's book is All of a Kind Family by Sydney Taylor. I had never heard of this book before. How did this book come into your life? What's your history with it?
I did a little digging because it was something that okay, so I picked it because it was my first chapter book. And that was a really exciting, I wasn't aware of it, but I love this book so much. And I read it a million times and it was always just there. And I couldn't figure out, and I talked to my mom recently, because my mom does not like to read, maybe like A Good Housekeeping or, the Spiegel catalog or something from back in the day, but like is not a reader. So I don't think she gave it to me. And we decided it probably came from my godmother, who was this very like worldly city li living, fancy lady who, when I was a kid, reminded me a little bit of like Miss Piggy, like super 80s glamour, pink and feathers and all the stuff. So I think that she might have given it to me, but regardless, it's just been in my life forever. Very important, very special book.
I'm so excited. I had never heard of it before, but it reminded me so much of Little House on the Prairie and was so reminiscent of that and how autobiographical it was. I think you said how like safe and earnest it is and the episodic sort of nature of it. So, a little backstory. Book comes out in 1951. It's the Korean War. The 22nd Amendment is passed, saying only 2 terms for a presidency. IBM is formed. Dennis the Menace makes his debut. But the author is Sydney Taylor. She bases it all on her real life sisters. She's born named Sarah in 1904 Manhattan. And
Whoa.
in letters later on to her life, she says that she changed her name in Sydney in high school when she joined a theater group because she felt Sarah was, quote, unglamorous,
True.
which I loved. She met her husband at the Young People's Socialist League.
Whoa.
She and her husband joined an experimental theater troupe for 2 years and studied under Martha Graham. She spent 40 years working at this summer camp with her sisters until the year before she died. She taught dance and drama.
Okay.
She wrote the book for her daughter, and there's a bit of like lore around it that she didn't plan to publish it, but her husband secretly submitted it for this award in 1951, and it won and it launched her career. It becomes a 5-book series. She's the first recipient of the Jewish Book Council's National Jewish Book Award for Children's Literature in 1952. And after her death, her husband establishes an award in her honor called the Sydney Taylor Book Award, which goes annually to outstanding books for children and teens that authentically portray the Jewish experience. And the first biography of her ever was published in 2021. It's called From Sarah to Sydney by June Cummins with Alexander Dunez.
Gotta read that.
Yeah, but that is her. I loved hearing about her and I loved everything about her husband because the dedication to this book is to my mother and father who made it possible and to my husband who made it probable. Love that.
I know. I did know it was autobiographical. Now it's just kind of occurring to me like it appealed to me for a lot of reasons, but it is sort of a nat like even coming out in 1951, Dennis the Menace and like James Dean and like teenagers and stuff, it sort of feels like anachronistic, I guess, even then, like set, wait, it's like, oh, we're right on the cusp of this thing and let's take it all the way back to the
Right.
beginning. But there's just something so charming about it, and it was so like exotic to me. I just it was like it's like the Little House on the Prairie, but something about the New York setting. Because as a kid, I always wanted to like go to New York and like work in fashion or magazines or whatever. So it was like starting to seed that stuff. But also, very accessible, like these little girls and this sweet family. And like, I don't know.
And you said you were one of five, is that correct?
Yeah. So it really appealed to me because I'm the youngest of five children. And I grew up in Montgomery County in a Victorian style house, but was a new build. And they had built two that were mirror images of each other. And then my next door neighbors was a Jewish family that had five children. And my best friend was like the youngest of that family. We were kind of close in age or similar. And we were Irish Catholic and they were Jewish. And my parents, my whole family was like DC, like lawyers and doctors or whatever. And they were like intellectuals and artists and they played the piano all the time, and the mother was a photographer, and that was like the first place I, through my childhood, like the first place I saw horror movies, weird, objectionable art. You know what I mean? Like a lot of stuff happened in that family. It was a very like special connection, and that book just felt kind of, like this magical destined thing, And it was just like another layer of this difference from me that I was always from a very young age kind of attracted to.
Yeah, I really wish that we had had this in school because I felt like something that in being in the outskirts of DC that you always get is this celebration of multiculturalism of like, we have this really broad world reach, everyone is from somewhere else. But I felt like the focus, and I didn't realize this until reading this book, I think the focus always felt like what's happening elsewhere and how are other places different. I think rather than like, and maybe I just forgot it all and it was there and I just don't remember, but like, what's my neighbor doing that is different from me? Because like I knew Jewish kids, but this book goes through not all of the annual holidays, but through a lot of holidays and not just the practices, but why and where these stories come from. And it is this like beautiful little invitation to a world and I think very and I don't know this exactly, but very new and different from its time. I mean, it's coming out right out of World War II, and it's I think like that's the way you seed empathy, is by saying everyone's just like me.
Yeah, that's a
And
big one for me.
it's set in 1912. And I did research in 1812 a little bit. New Mexico and Arizona become states. The Titanic sinks. The
Yes.
Girl Scouts are founded.
Okay.
Woodrow Wilson wins the presidency, beating both Teddy Roosevelt and the incumbent president, Taft.
Wow.
And it's just 2 years before World War I starts. So it does feel a tiny bit, like you were saying about the 50s, like you're on the cusp of something, and I mean that's childhood, isn't it? About things starting. But I guess my first thing is the book starts with going to the library and their love of the library, and what was interesting is how this book talks about poverty and that this family is not poor, but things are tight, and we have to be really mindful of our money. And she ends up owing. This book gets lost. She needs to pay for it. Sarah, the middle child, who is 8 years old, and it costs a dollar. And I looked it up. A dollar in 1912 is $31 today, just for a little context, which is like big money for an 8 year old. But I wanted to ask, like, what was the library like for you? Was that a big part of your life?
Actually, so I lived in this little sort of hamlet, very small town near the Mormon temple, up in that neighborhood, and we had a little children's library in the neighborhood that was, I should have done some research. I don't know when it was
Oh, that's
built.
fine.
It's called the Noyes. It was pronounced the Noyes Library. No, yes. And then it was just, it's all for kids. And the whole thing, it was like yellow and brown and very storybook-ish looking from the outside. And you go in and it was like, they had the section for like the baby books that I had grown out of or whatever, and there was like Play-Doh and toys or whatever, and then there was like chapter books and it, but it was just all for kids, little teeny, super magical. I can still remember the way that it smelled, but it was always a very significant, like fun, cool place to me. I just thought it was like, we can take these books and you can take them home and you can take out like 25 at a time and they're all different and it's free and you bring them back and you see your friends and there's artwork on the walls. And it was just a really like tent pole kind of place for me as a
Yeah.
child. I spent a lot of time there. So, like, and then I guess, I don't know. I mean, I had always liked to read and I wasn't looking for any, validation of that, but I guess sort of subconsciously, if that's like your first chapter, I'm like, okay, like these girls are cool. And it's cool. Like they weren't dorks or whatever. Like they were like cool,
Yes.
girls that like to have fun and liked to be enthusiastic. And the library lady was so beautiful. And just the whole thing was very like, all right, it's cool. Reading is cool. Like very just
Yeah.
at the basis, I was like, all right, I'm amongst friends.
And I liked there was even a distinction at one point. Their father runs like a junk shop. That doesn't feel like the right word for it, but a used goods store. And there's an early chapter where he gets a whole bunch of books. He says, "You guys go pick what you
Obsessed.
want. You can keep as many as you want." And they make this distinction. There are reading books and studying books, which I loved because I did grow up with a lot of studying books around. You know, but that there's still like a place for you. There's still an entry level and they're like just as valid. And I loved the character of the library lady. There's this little subplot with her and the family friend, Charlie. But I loved her because I feel like a lot of girls have you have like your ideal of like, I want to be her when I grow up. And for me, it was this one camp counselor who was like, I was very much always invested in like the grouchy people, the one who like don't like anyone, but she's gonna like me because I follow the rules so good. I loved that character. Was there like a corollary to that for you growing up?
I mean, just in that, like, I wanted to be her. I
Yeah.
loved the romance and like the subplot between her and Charlie, the wealthy family friend. I mean, it's like this story has grown in a lab for me personally. You know what I mean? Like, there's something romantic and sort of like old, very old, like Jane Austen about it or something, you know?
Yeah.
But she doesn't go too much into it. She drops these like little seeds throughout. But I thought it was like, I don't know, reminiscent of like the Secret Garden or like just some like sort of tragic, backstory. But again, I didn't really, the details aren't even like consequential. I just like the vibes of it.
Yeah, it's that there's this woman at the library, and separately there is this family friend Charlie who we know comes from a wealthier background. He's educated and he just kind of disappears sometimes, seems distant from his family. And we discover that there's a great scene at the end of the book where library lady and Charlie are come into the same room together, and they're long lost lovers who were gonna get married and they couldn't. And they leave the apartment to say, we're gonna go fix it and patch things up with his parents and get married right away. It's such wish fulfillment, especially because Ella, the oldest girl, has a crush on Charlie and she gets sad knowing that he, had a lover back in the day. And yet, we're okay with him getting a love interest because it's this woman that we love in the end. Is just so wonderful.
And I mean, I guess they do, she does sort of briefly, explain like Miss Allen, aka the library lady, like stops in her tracks or whatever, but we primarily experience the entire thing through the girl's eyes,
Yeah.
and we don't have a lot of detail, and you just kind of are pierced with that like sweet, acute sort of yearning of like, I don't know what this is, but I sort of long for it, but it's scary and it's exciting. I don't know. It was just like incredibly compelling, as a,
Yeah.
I think I must have been around 8 or 9 when I read this.
Yeah. Which makes sense. That's the I don't think there's necessarily a main character, but that's the author's character is 8 years old in the book.
And then, yeah, like even though it's a very small subplot, I was drawn in by that. I was drawn in by like Papa's clear sort of feminism,
Yeah.
like within the orthodox sort of framework of their lives. He's so like, he wants the girls to be smart. He wants them to read. He like thinks mama's so strong. Like it was just like, I was just like, yes, like these are all important things to learn as a kid. And I don't think I was really conscious of it, but I was like, this guy's cool. It's
Yeah.
probably why I like guys with mustaches now. You know what I mean?
Well,
Like,
yeah. And they give him this great cup that has a mustache guard,
Yeah.
which, frankly, that's something I should get my boyfriend now that I'm thinking about it.
It's a really cool, like, antiquey item.
And I love the perspective there because they give it to the dad and the dad doesn't smile and it cuts into his mind and it also cuts into mother's mind sometimes, which I think is great. Just a great exercise in like, here's what your parents might be thinking, I think is so great. And he says like, God, this costs so much money for something so pointless. And then there's the lesson of like, well, actually my children's joy is the thing that matters the most. Which I
That was a hard
loved.
chapter for me. I was like devastated when he doesn't like it. Like, I mean, you're like, what? You know, I mean, I get it, but like, it is like sad. It makes me really sad. It's just very, it's just, it's that whole like, the language is really simple, obviously, but it just is so plain and bare and like communicative, you know, like.
Yeah, it's definitely like it's you said it was your first chapter book, and I think it is like it reminded me of the Boxcar Children in a
Oh,
way.
yes. Love the Boxcar Children.
And they're like the sentence structure is kind of similar. This one, I think the writing is more lush,
Yes.
certainly, is more descriptive and but the like the backstory with Charlie and with Miss Allen really reminded me of I did the Boxcar Children a couple weeks ago, and there's this like great vague mystery about their grandfather that felt very similar. And where are their parents? But you were talking about Papa as this kind of like feminist figure. There's one thing I wrote down is on the Sabbath, quote, first he must pronounce the prayer in praise of his wife for her fine Sabbath preparations, which I loved. It's everybody in the family has a purpose and has skills and you go through all of these events through the year and they I'm just looking through my notes. I think I didn't grow up with religion at all. Like we celebrated Christmas, but that was basically it. And I think the main thing that I regret about not having religion, and I'm fine not having that, it was a real sense of community, which I didn't have at all.
And that was, you know, that like me going over to the neighbor's house on Saturday nights or whatever, it was almost like I was getting foundational information about whatever their history was because they were very modern Jews. Like they just had like parties and people over for dinner. And, you know, I never even saw them, I don't think. Like I did learn when the closest, you know, my friend that was closest to my age when she was getting bat mitzvah, I did learn like the prayer or whatever with her. But, I never saw them do like the blessings, the candles, the handkerchiefs over the head, like none of that. It was just party, but it was this sense of community. It was like friends, family, cousins, all these people. The dad owned a Shoney's, I think, at some point. So it was like people from there. And it was this sense of, because yeah, I was coming from this Irish Catholic sort of thing, but it was all very like repressed-ish. Of just like kind of like already like lapsed Catholics, like my family like was just like whatever about it, and I had never experienced this thing where it's like all these parties and then parties with decorations that aren't like a choice, like the whole like Seder and the building of the sukkahs in the backyard and stuff with like the paper flowers and branches and fruits and stuff like. They did that for real, and it blew my mind as a kid. I was like, "What?
Yeah, I
It's so
was so
beautiful. It's so
jealous of like
simple."
you get to build a whole house with your parents and you get to keep it up for a month to like as a mid-20s-year-old, I was really jealous of that. That sounds like really
No,
my
like,
form of play.
I mean, if you lived in Brooklyn right now and your neighbors were like, "We're gonna build a fort in the back because we have this tiny yard or whatever," you'd be like, "Oh my God!" You
Exactly.
know, like,
Invite me over. Yes. And I
big Indiana
loved
vibes.
Oh yes. There was a huge or one thing I loved, especially like comparing to, my limited knowledge of Christianity and Catholicism, but on Purim, there's a quote of nobody cared how much noise they made. And there's like that was especially something in Little House on the Prairie. There's a chapter about Sundays, about church and things like that. And the rule is like you have to be silent. And that was something of like that I think I said in our episode is like, why does worship and glory to God have to be a bummer. Like, why can't
Yeah.
it be joy? And yeah, it was such a treat to be with them. And there's, I think you said like masquerades, and we go around to all of the families, and
Yeah.
we give them things and they give us things. It was just delightful.
Yeah, and giving little girls particularly the go ahead to stomp and scream and make noise and, be so boisterous in the service. I mean, again, in the book, like it's in the service of God, but it was very much, well, at least for me, I was able to sort of be fluent in that world and then have my takeaways that didn't necessarily have to correlate with like it being a celebration of religion, that I could just, in certain situations be loud, be whatever. And so I don't know. It was like, I seriously, I really don't think whoever gave it to me, maybe it was my Auntie Liz, like I don't think they thought also, because the book, the front of it doesn't have anything to do with.
No.
You know what I mean? Like it's just a family story. I don't think anybody even thought about it. They were just like, Emily likes to read. She's into ch she's at this level. Here you go. Not really realizing like the takeaways.
Yeah, just at the cover, it mostly reminded me of Samantha from American Girl Dolls, because it's the same
Yeah.
kind of little dress.
Yeah. I was obsessed with like the whole idea too of like, because I don't know. I've always been a very like, I'm a modern gal, but like I don't mind the homesteading, like sewing up a hole in something versus buying a new thing is very easy and natural for me. And like I was even then, I just like the whole woolen stockings, you can just like re-knit a hole to like fix them. I was like, what? Like it's just like a very there are simple ways people used to live that I think are ultimately better than whatever we have got going on right now. That's a very small example, but like it did sort of, I don't know, it was my first intro into these things where I'm like, you don't have to buy bread. Like you could just make
You could
bread.
just make bread.
And that it's me and like my mother, I think we got a bread maker in the 90s, but like there was no freshly baked bread of my life. So like it was a big deal to be like, wow, you can sort of take this power back into your hands and be like, I'm gonna make the alchemy of flour and water, and I'm gonna make bread. It was just like that first flush of that for me.
I found that as well in the second chapter called Dusting is Fun, where Ma, to engage the kids, makes this activity of dusting an adventure and a scavenger hunt just by putting, no, it's pennies, not buttons, putting little pennies here and there.
No, I think she did buttons, and then one would be a penny to keep you engaged, right? Because you don't know if it's going to be a button or a penny.
And it makes it so exciting. It makes it a game, and all we have to do is get buttons, which we already have, and it
Yeah.
incentivizes an activity, and I think like a great lesson for kids, but also just like you said, a great like window into not just back then, but I think there's like a greater appreciation for what you have.
Yeah. And also as a writer and like an artist or whatever, I was like, dusting isn't fun. And this is a bold move as your second chapter. You know what I mean? Like, okay, let's see what we're doing here. How are you going to make it fun? And then it's like, boom, it is fun. Like it was a very like clever, trick as a writer to me. I was like, wow, this is like brilliant. Like, never heard of this. And I just thought it was like a bold, and then again, like really does, with between that and the first chapter with the library lady, it very much sets the tone for like, what we're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that even with that first chapter, that the first hint of conflict is that Sarah has lost this book. I think like children's books don't always have like really rooted in real life consequences.
Right.
And it immediately starts with that. And there's you sent me some notes ahead of time, and you talked about how much you loved the market sequence. And I wanted to just touch on that, like treasured outings with families, because I had a few of those of like, for me, it was like going to the mall, I think in like maybe Potomac Mills, and there was an Amish market near us
Oh, yeah.
that right by the Outback Steakhouse, and those were like we would finish summer camp, and my mom would take me to get a pretzel and a lemonade at the Amish market. It was
Yeah.
very, those are very treasured things.
Oh, it's so good. I don't know, like my mother is an antique dealer and
Oh,
she, yeah. So I actually, like, this wasn't like completely new information, some of this stuff to me, or at least I was like, familiar with the concept of like, oh, porcelain is a fancy child. Like some of the stuff that, like the dad's mug, his birthday present chapter, I knew a little bit of that stuff, but I found it. I don't know, like she dragged me. There wasn't a flea market or a yard sale or a thrift store or something that she didn't drag me through every single time she saw it for my entire life, which got to be like a little bit like punishing after a while. But there was something about the just like overwhelming kind of dazzlingness of these markets where you kind of wander through and like, it definitely her being a an antique dealer or whatever, it was very similar of like you have people setting up different booths and different wares and you've got some characters and some personalities in there and that can reflect on what they sell and stuff. So I was like completely blown away by the market, both the experience of reading it and then also Sydney Taylor's ability of writing this scene that like especially the food situation for me and we can segue into me talking about how this was like one of my first food book, my first like
Yeah.
food writing that I'd ever read that like really 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 just like transported me across miles and years and whatever. I just couldn't get enough about it and you're right, like the word lush you used earlier to describe her writing, it was just so vivid. And it was new, like picture books and like there's I almost picked Sylvester and the Magic Pebble. Remember that one? Because that was a really like that's a vivid like emotional book. Like I think like a lot of children's books are either the artwork is impactful or there's like these emotions happening there. But I had never read something that's like taking me through a meal or these sort of sensuous things that you're smelling and hearing and tasting, like that are all new. I kind of couldn't believe it that it was possible to sort of translate that physical experience into something that you can share with people.
Yeah, and into words that are evocative that can, yeah, transport.
I mean, to me, it was like, okay, so like every movie or episodic show or whatever has a like a party scene.
Yeah.
I mean, like to me, the market was like one of those like party scenes where it's like you've got the weird characters coming through and the old pretzel woman and like the imagery of the mushroom salesman and the garlic salesman wearing just like loops of mushrooms and garlics like around like in necklaces around and bracelets around their arms and necks. I was like, whoa, and this would be something like, it was like the party scene of the novel to me. And there's like so much action and it seeds into things later because we see that Henny wants to dress up as the pretzel woman, one of the sisters, when they go in their masquerade. And it's just like it was a big, again, as a writer and a reader, it was a very significant chapter for me to see, like, oh, this is how you do some of these things, you know?
Yeah, I hadn't made that connection with Henny later dressing up. Absolutely. It's
I mean, so I didn't know. Okay, and again, my mom was 5 kids. By the time I came around too, she was like overcooking. Like we didn't, I don't, whatever. So I had never had like a lot of these foods and like I didn't know what chickpeas were, but at one point, they all have a penny to spend and then all the girls, they pick a vendor to spend it at. Just the description of the chickpea salesman. Also the idea that somebody is just wheeling around. Again, I didn't see this in Maryland. Like in LA,
Yeah.
you see people selling food on the streets. Like maybe in downtown DC, you see people with like hot dogs, but like this was so exotic to me.
Yeah.
The idea that the chickpea man was just wheeling around a cart full of like hot stewed chickpeas and then the description of him pulling out the white paper, twirling it into a little cup, ladling out the chickpeas, was unbelievable to me. And I recreated it all the time, but I didn't know what chickpeas were. So I would, but I did love like green sweet baby peas
Yeah.
or whatever. But I would eat, there's a line in it about how the chickpeas are like hot and salty and they like made the girls thirsty or
Yeah.
whatever, or spicy with salt and pepper. And I would like salt and pepper the crap out of these little green peas and like ladle them into a little cup and pretend I was like in the thing until, you know, then I found out what chickpeas are way later. And like that also, when I found that out, I was like, the first thing I thought of later when I had hummus or whatever for the first time, I was like, hold on a damn minute. You know what I mean? And like finally put it together, like, whoa, like it just like, I don't know. There's just, and something I've never seen. I've never seen it in TV. I've never seen it in a movie. Like, this was a new system for me. It was
Yeah.
exciting.
Yeah, and they, like you said, they're these characters, you know everyone, and there's a specialness to it of like, this is the man who only sells chickpeas, these are his, and there's a ritual to it and a specialness. Yeah, absolutely.
And the same goes for the chapter where the two youngest go to the market to have like their special who cares if it's bedtime kind of moment
Yeah.
where they go and they pick out candy from that grumpy lady. And then they go, and but like even like her description where she's just like looking at them over her newspaper and she's kind of rolling her eyes, but she's like kind of like endeared to them. And then the description of like the man with the silky white beard that gives them like broken crackers and gives them pieces of locks. I was just like, really? Again, like, I don't know. I was going through it again in prep to talk to you about it. And I was like, there aren't many like quotable, it's not the lushest writing ever, but it is somehow like I couldn't pick one like the right quotes, but just as a whole, the whole thing was just like just tantalizing, you know?
Yeah, that's a great word for it. Tantalizing. Yeah.
And new stuff like you know, I don't know, they buy chocolate babies.
Yeah.
Don't know what those are. I tried to look them up. Did you happen to look them up?
No, I just assumed they were like chocolate poured into to baby molds, but I
They
don't know.
are, but there's something about like I don't know. I mean, again, I'm a writer and an artist. I'm real visual, so something about sometimes like literally letters next to each other will sort of make an impact. I don't know. Like they it just sound, I was like, what? Sounded like the most magical candy ever.
Yeah. They ritualize it again so much of like bite off the head and the little tiny legs. You have to be really careful, you
Yeah,
know.
it's
And then
so
by then we just
fun.
eat all of it because we're so excited. Yeah.
I looked at, I mean, the branding is really fun because they did exist. You know, again, just like chocolate, any, you know, in any mold or whatever, but the branding's really cool. If you look up retro, like chocolate babies, and then yeah. His assortment of broken.
Literal Cracker Barrel. It blew my mind.
Yeah. P.S. I've never been to a real Cracker Barrel. Is that, do they have that there? Is that part of it?
I've never seen that, and I've been to many a Cracker Barrel, but I have never been to a Cracker Barrel in a good mood. It was always my whole family was from Kentucky, and so we would usually stop at a Cracker Barrel in West Virginia as like the halfway point, and
Right.
nobody
Okay.
wanted to be there. There's
Right.
like the big gift shop in the front, and maybe they had that,
Yeah.
but I never remember them selling like crackers as a part of the meal. You know, I remembered
Yeah.
biscuits and gravy and mac and cheese and you know, Southern comforts.
Yeah, and here, like, it was also tripped me up again with my senses and like what's going on, because it's broken crackers, but then there's like a chocolate cookie, and there's a ginger snap in there, there's
There's a
a lemon.
lemon
And
one. Yeah.
so then I was kind of tripped up and I was like, well, did they just call all cookies crackers back in the day? Like in England they call them biscuits. Like, again, it was just like a bunch of question marks and exciting things for me to
Yeah.
contemplate as a kid. Why are they calling it this? What's going on here?
There's a degree of mystery, like what's this one gonna taste like? And which one did you get? And
Yeah.
yeah, everything just seems more special and more exciting.
Yeah. Even
Absolutely.
like, you know, the description of like, okay, so all the girls, you know, they are, tight on money, and they live in in tenement housing. They have four rooms. They've got a kitchen, a front room, the girls' room, and the parents' room. And the girls always go down together, no matter what, to give mama and papa a little time to canoodle at the end. But even so, that chapter is about Gertie and Charlotte playing around in bed. But there's a brief description about Ella and Sarah, who liked, they have a fantasy magical house and they like to decorate all the rooms. Which again, did you ever read a book called The Pink Hotel?
No, I don't think so.
Oh my God, we should do that one. It's really, really good. That's
Hell
a
yeah.
slightly older,
Let
like,
me look it up. Yeah.
it's so good. But there is I don't know. I always pictured the girls like, pink and gold and like Regency period. I don't know. Like it was just again, like I wanted to know what they were doing. And then Henny, who liked to sleep alone, she was always planning mischief. I wanted to know what she was doing. Like there was just something very, it's just the whole idea of Sydney Taylor, like kind of just putting the spotlight on these normal, girls or whatever. And then it just feels special, like you said, like exciting, and like they're up to something.
Yeah, there's just so much joy. It's a family that's pretty much, at least internally, without conflict. Everyone really loves each other. I think the only real conflict is when Gertie's no longer the baby, when they have the boy at the end.
I didn't even that chapter was also really traumatic for me because as the baby of a family, that position is clutch, should never be surrendered under any circumstances. And then also like the boy coming in, like I know, like, that's a fulfillment of a wish. But to me, because also like I did read the sequels,
Yeah.
but I was pretty much over like the arrival of baby Charlie or whatever at the very end of the book was actually like puncturing like my perfect bubble. I was like, I'm gonna tear out this whole chapter and just end it when they come home from the freaking boardwalk.
I feel that too. I felt that 100% too.
Because it did give me a little bit, maybe my first taste of like the Hollywood ending that nobody wants kind of
Yeah.
vibes, where it's like,
Yeah. There's
I
this
don't
sense
want
of
this
like,
dumb boy baby.
yeah, get this is our place. Get out of here. Yeah, it reminds me of the Emma Stone SNL sketch of like you have so many things already. Let us have this one thing. Yeah.
Very much that. And then I don't know. I always find, and I think this is, again, this is from a storytelling, like what writers need for drama kind of vibes. But like, I don't understand people back in the day, like you had like a 12-year-old and then you had a baby. And it's like, I've never met a family like that in my life where there was like, okay, you've got like a 7 and an 8-year-old and we're gonna watch them. And, but like, then now we need to like reintroduce drama. So we're gonna like manufacture a baby. Like it just felt like that. And immediately I was like, this family's jumped the shark. I'm over. I mean, I still, of course, loved it, but it really does bang up against me a little bit.
Absolutely.
I would have rather seen, like, I don't know, Ella go to Juilliard or something, opera singer. I don't care about that baby. That baby sucks. Or like Ch Charlie and the library, like we should have spun it out to them or something.
I'd rather see
And
their
they should have had
baby.
a baby girl and named it Sydney or something. But
Yeah, or like name it after mama. Yeah.
yeah. So yeah, that's kind of, I don't know. Should we just rip it out now? Just tell people
I
to just
think
skip
so.
the last chapter for
That's
sure.
what we decided. Sideways Stories from Wayside School is required reading, except for one chapter, where there's some fat phobia, and we'll just get rid of that
Oh,
one.
yeah,
And the
that's
rest are
hard.
fine.
Wait, what book is that?
Sideways Stories from Wayside School.
That is a new one for me.
Oh, that was one of the first ones that I had actually like on the podcast that I had actually read. It's fun. It's about an elementary school that was built wrong and all the wackiness and the every
Fun.
yeah, it's really cute. I recommend it.
Kids' books are so good.
Yeah.
So important.
I remember there's you sent me some notes. You mentioned Roman candle, another exotic thing, which is interesting because in our county, fireworks were banned, and you would have to go to like a different county to pick them
Exactly.
up.
1,000%. And I think those were like, I guess I have seen a Roman candle now. But it was something like, I mean, even as a kid, I'd seen fireworks and stuff, but this was like a new.
When I was in college, the two big sort of culture shocks were going into gas stations and seeing, because I went to college in Georgia, seeing alcohol sold in gas stations. Because I don't know if it's all Maryland, but in Montgomery County, you can only get alcohol from an alcohol store. And the other thing was walking to Target and there were fireworks everywhere. And I was like, this is lawlessness.
A 1,000%. I felt that way. Well, I guess North Carolina doesn't have fireworks, but South Carolina does. Yeah, the Roman candle, just the whole like richness that Charlie brings into it. It's like a little bit like, I don't know what his backstory is, but he's giving me like Armie Hammer before Armie Hammer got canceled or
Yeah,
whatever. Like he's, sort of like he's just like to me again, this quintessential, like rich, like suited, fancy dude that's got access to things.
Yeah, man of
But the story
mystery.
about him burning his hands on the fireworks and him, like, wherever Charlie came from is 1,000 miles away from this family, But this family still makes him feel very loved and safe. But it was just sort of like, it was just a little window of down a hallway of like, wow, this is really expansive. And these characters, there's all kinds of different characters in this book. It is little or as long as we spend with them. There's so much going on.
Which is a real accomplishment in writing when you can imagine and spin off all those different worlds from little introductions of characters.
Yeah, and how and the economy of it too. Like you really don't have to say that much, and then you just kind of slightly open this door, and then it's just so suggestive. I just saw my note on the 4th of July, under the Roman candles. I said Charlie's sad backstory. The first man I wanted to fix. Ha
I
ha!
love it.
True. True.
And he gets fixed by the end. He gets set up with a
Oh.
nice lady who's
So
patient and
good.
kind and forgiving. Yeah.
So romantic and wonderful.
I very felt the chapter where Sarah refuses to eat her soup. And there's even a line of everyone knew she was being silly, but they could understand. Everybody felt stubborn once in a while. I still feel that way. I still have the days where it's like, I know this doesn't mean anything, but I need to be angry about it for 30 more minutes before I'm
Yeah,
ready to move on.
I have this quote. Tears of rage were beginning to appear in Sarah's eyes. The children all felt sorry for her. They knew she was being silly, but they could understand. Everyone felt stubborn once in a while. Charlotte whispered, "Oh, give in. Go on, Sarah, give in." Which is like, again, like this was such an emotional lesson for me, 'cause like you even as a kid, like you recognize like I'm acting out or like something, some contrary imp had taken a hold of her and she couldn't really fight it. And even though she could see that they could see all the mechanisms going on, you kind of can't break it. And that was like bolstered me and taught me a lot as a kid. But even now, like there is a little bit of there's a lot of like self-love in there, which is like forgive yourself and like it's a, you know what I mean? Like you're being silly, but everyone's silly sometimes. Like it's okay to relent. It's okay to change your mind. It's okay to like stop being so silly and like laugh at yourself. Like it's just there, that is like so packed in that chapter.
I think it's like the highest moment of tension and conflict really in the book. And she puts it in her own character. I loved the exact quote that you brought up, contrary imp.
Yeah, and Mama, and then we see a flash of like why it's not arbitrary. 'Cause so as a kid, like my mom's not forcing me to eat because she's a mean ogre. We have X amount of money and this is why and the whole thing. So you kind of like see that and understand that, but then you still have that feeling of like, I don't want to play along, even though it has to be the way. Like it's just really good. And I mean, I think about that little rhyme all the time. Yeah, that's probably the most intense chapter, Sarah in trouble. And then I also mentioned the, did I delete this? When mama has her hands full or whatever, when the girls get scarlet fever.
One of my notes was, did you think about those quarantine sequences in 2020? It was
It was the first time I had ever seen the word quarantine in my life. And it was my first exposure to something being quarantined and what that's like. And then, yeah, like never in my life did I think like I would ever be in that situation or anybody would ever have to be quarantined like that again. And yeah. And then they really, I mean, I guess, I don't know, they did it just as well as we did with like, now bring in books and toys and all of this stuff to continue to, keep life moving, because the big thing is it's Passover, I guess,
Yeah, I think so.
during that chapter. And the girls, they always want to contribute to the celebration, and then they're all sad because they're in bed. Just like a fast. Oh yeah, here it is. Oh yeah, COVID chapter. Yeah, yeah. That's wild. That was a wild one for me.
Absolutely. I love you have a note here on the family outing and Henny goes missing. You say the lesson is not to cry and you get a cone because they have this whole panic about this girl's gone missing and they find her at the police station. She's like, "Hey guys, I'm chilling out. Got a lot of candy."
It's just too, it's like every girl sort of has their big personality trait or whatever. Henny, of course, that's the tell, right? Anytime you have old-fashioned girl name that's shortened to something like boyish, we get like, okay, Henny's the wild
Joke.
one. Like, we're gonna get, she's the tomboy, she's the knee, scraping the knees, she's getting into stuff. And we get that characterization very easily from the first chapter. And then she is the kind of the wild one throughout. And she has her own odyssey. Again, like I'm a big lover of carnivals and circuses and freak shows and sideshows and all that kind of stuff. So I was like obsessed with that situation and her going on this odyssey. Again, great food talk in that chapter. Nothing has ever sounded so good than a sandwich in a white lunch, a white shoe box after swimming in the ocean at Coney Island. Like, amazing. And then, yeah, she goes and she gets lost and she kind of just chills out, stays calm, doesn't cry like a little baby, some namby-pamby ass baby.
Yeah,
And
she
then
goes
she
up to a
gets,
police officer and is like, "I'm lost."
and then, like, yeah, I don't know. And yeah, the sort of mama's, terror against that sort of relief, and like the whole like comedic relief of the people being like, "Hey, sister, calm down. Here's a jelly apple." I was like, "What the flip is a jelly apple? What's going on? Who are these people?" Just something very like quaint but bizarre about it too. It's like you sort of step into like bizarro history world.
Yeah, it's I think sort of the constant we look into the past to understand our present, and I think maybe it's one of the first times that you see, my mom and her father are both historians, and one of the things that I really appreciate is exposing me to stories that are period pieces that are based in histories that we've all been just as clueless as always. The thing for me is the big touchstone was this musical about the founding fathers, and the big message from that is like these were just normal guys who made bad decisions like the rest of us.
I know. And then we like act like that there's some sort of like infallible sense of
Exactly.
God, like.
There's a great quote in that comes that it's called 1776. It's about the writing of the Declaration of Independence. It's John Adams is the main character, and it's a very big thing for me. But there's a quote in that that is pulled almost directly from a John Adams letter that says, like, when they tell the story of the revolution, they'll say Benjamin Franklin, harnessed electricity with his key and kite. He shot it into the ground, and out sprung George Washington, fully clothed and on his horse, and together the three of them, Franklin, Washington, and the horse, led the entire revolution by themselves. And they're deities. We put them on mountains, and they're just normal guys. And I think there's so many layers of like people who live in New York are just people. People who are Jewish are just people. People who live in 1912 are just people. I think that's great. That's why we read.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really big one. I feel like I've never, no judgment. People can do whatever. I consume all kinds of media that's good, bad, whatever. But when people are like, "I don't like to read," or "I never was a reader," it just seems to me that was like I mean, it was such a huge way that I learned about the world, that I learned, I mean, it is, there is a 1000% direct thick line between me and empathy and reading and just like finding out like, oh, this person's sad, this person's happy, this person made a mistake. Enormous, huge. And I find it like really, I don't know, heartening and humanizing and like really important. So I can't, and it's free. I mean, if you're a library lover, of course, like let's support our authors, but like
Let's
it's
also
free.
support our libraries. Support your local
I
library.
love my local library so much. I actually get like teared up when I pass the library, or actually when I usually when I'll go into like the public library website to request books, and I look at the programming and stuff on the homepage, and it's like it's the most sincere like finger painting with your pet ferret day or whatever, or like grandparents like are all invited for the story time. I mean, I could like weep about just the absolutely like open-hearted, sincere, like let's connect, let's read, let's have fun. Like I could just lay down on the floor and sob about it. Like it just the public library is such a magical place. And I don't know if they do this all over the country, but in LA County, they're giving away free COVID tests there. They're just like stacked up on the thing. In
And
fact, I asked them, I was like, are these for sale? And they were like, no, they're free. And then they started pulling out like stacks of them, got a bit like a grocery sized bag, brown paper bag, filled it with COVID tests. And they were like, do you have people you can take these to? Like, please, like, whatever. I mean, I don't know, like 50 tests in my bathroom right now from the library. And I was like, yeah, I'll give them out to people if you want.
You can get like passes to museums. They have like events and like walking tours. They have a 3D printer somewhere in the LA Public Library system.
What? That's amazing. And then again, like they've got Canopy, that free streaming, like move over Criterion Collection. Like
Exactly. And you can
it's me
get
in the Canopy closet.
through Libby, you can get, or through Hoopla, through your library card, you can get access to the great courses, which I love to do because you can just, I
Oh.
want to, like, I for a long time, I was doing a course on like pre-Columbian North American civilizations, which is
Whoa.
fascinating.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it continues to be like the hottest place in town for sure in terms of their offerings. I really wanted to be a librarian, but it just again, like I didn't want to get another degree. And it's probably more important now too, as things like become digital or whatever, to have like a library science degree. But some like I always go in, I'm like, you guys have the best damn jobs in the entire world. Especially like when you get like, the central library or something that's like a also a historical building or beautiful architecture.
I wonder if community college, if the LA Community College has anything with libraries on it.
I don't know, but it is something that like I might have to work in me getting my library science degree at some point, because it just is such an important place. And this book is very much like one of the purest expressions of just like that vibe. Those people, like this is where we want to be. I would imagine. I mean, I know that Sarah is sort of Sydney Taylor's stand-in, but I would imagine that Sarah like gets her library science degree, like gets into she's in into STEM, or like she
At
does.
least, yeah, at least one of these kids has to, at least for a period, want to be Miss Allen.
1,000%.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then goes on to like, I don't know, be the first woman astronaut, something.
Yeah. It was such a thing to me about this book coming out in 19, or it being set in 1912. It's 7 years before women get the right to vote. And it's the year that Girl Scouts start, and Girl Scouts is a huge thing for me. And initially it was for older girls, so it would have been like Ella and Henny. And you were talking about earlier, like being able to sew things up really simply, and that was one of the first badges to get, like the biggest award at the beginning. One of the requirements was you have to get your driver's license.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just a really cool time period, and I once had a woman say like, "Well, look, it's really sexist that sewing was one of the first badges," and I was like, "No, everybody needs to know how to sew." actually. Everybody needs to know how to sew.
And there's something about it where, like, at least as a kid, I felt like, I don't know. I mean, I was like, I like doing stuff, but I was never much of a joiner. I think I had too much anxiety. Like, I did brownies, right? I just like, I didn't want to be away from my mom, and like, I didn't want to be out of my comfort zone. So reading was a huge way for me to participate and to like learn things. And it was a way, like, I liked to sew. And I mean, my mom taught me how to knit, just like the one, main stitch I just did over and over and over again. But it was like a way to sort of like feel connected or have like this sort of community of, I don't know, like basic skills that I wouldn't have, like, because we didn't have, we didn't have a home ec. My mom didn't, like, I didn't know any of these things, but I was really curious about them and interested in how, to live these like simple lives. And then doing it, I was like, oh yeah, I'm like part of this gang, it was very community oriented or something. It was just like a very like welcoming sort of interest. And it's weird because it's not saying like come and learn about us. You know what I mean? It's that thing of like if you're just sort of honest and transparent about your life, like that sort of it just drew me in really quickly, where I was like, wow, this is like a special family to be a part of immediately.
It is. It's such a treat of a book. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And again, like nobody knows about it, which is so crazy because it's like it won this big award and it spun off all these, like, I think there's like five other books as the girls, grow up and stuff.
Yeah, I was amazed that there, I mean, there's podcasts about like Louise May Alcott, and you can go on like whole pilgrimages to Laura Ingalls Wilder's house. And yet there's just the very first biography of her is like 2 years old.
I know, I can't believe that. I cannot wait to read that. I mean, this is not my first copy because I've given them away, but this says that it was $5.50. So I wonder, that must have been,
Yeah,
I don't know the last time a book cost that.
let's see, just saying it's 1951 money,
I would say
but
this copy is probably from 1980
let's see,
or 1990.
it's 1980 would be $18 today.
Makes sense.
Was 1990. I accidentally typed in the year 9, and it said we can't tell you what the cost was in the year 9. It was
Oh
$11 in 1990.
my God.
Yeah, books today cost like $30. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I can't recommend it enough. My favorite thing about my like current age right now and like my friends having kids is giving books, like ones that I have deemed like very important, This is one that I wish more both boys and girls read. Obviously, I guess is a little bit more appealing for girls, but this is a huge one. I've given away. So yeah, this is a copy that I got not that long ago because I've given away like a lot of these books.
How did you feel coming off this reread? I think you said you've revisited it many times over the years.
I have read it many times. I mean, the thing I was really struck with rereading it, which I kind of touched on already, is that like it was a really important book for me as a writer eventually. Like this, a lot of it taught me how to write, or at least taught me what I found compelling and where I wanted to sort of spend my energy. But I thought of it as a book in my memory as it having like incredible lines, like searing, emotional, like whatever, or these crazy descriptions. And then when I looked at it back, I was like, oh, it's not exactly, I mean, I just remembered as being so powerful. And then not that it's just a book or anything like that, but it didn't, it has more of a whole feeling rather than something I can pull out and be like, this is the chapter or this is the line or this is the character. Just sort of the whole thing is kind of impactful, but it all works as like one of parts instead of being able to pull out those parts, like it's just this perfect book.
Yeah, and they're probably like those things about it searing pieces was probably like very true the first few times that you read it and at the time.
Yeah, I probably haven't sat down and read it in, I don't know, 10 years or something, but I still, I mean, every single page, I was like, I know all of this. Like, this is all happening. I think it's really important as a history lesson, as an exposure to like different types of people, different religions, different socioeconomic kind of things. And then again, like little artists and readers and writers and sort of people that are interested in. I'm always drawn to people that like eat and drink and be merry, kind of, you know, the Wife of Bath and the Canterbury Tales, you know, like those kind of like larger than life characters, and that has a little bit of this in it. It's just like I'm obsessed with sort of the foods and the fine things and like really enjoying life. So like any sort of like, I mean, I know they're Orthodox Jews, but really any sort of like libertine kind of vibes in here where you're just like you're building this little outhouse in the back so you can party, or you're like you're going to the market and doing all this marketing so you can like have this beautiful spread for like friends and family. Like it's just these people like to party, and
Yeah,
I'm up.
there's joy, which it feels like
Beautiful.
not very Christian in a way.
And even like there's a when they do have the Passover celebration, four of the girls are sick, and I think Henny is by herself. It
I think
didn't get
so.
sick. One of them's by themselves, but anyway, so it's Mama and Papa and Henny, and there's an illustration of them sitting at the table, and then the girls get like a tiny glass of wine.
Yeah, or a sip or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but she has the illustration. Oh wait, what is it? There's a tiny glass of wine on her in front of her, and I was like, whoa, okay, so even the kids are getting a little wine. Look.
Yeah.
Look at that tiny glass of wine in front of them. That is the smallest thing you've ever seen in your entire life.
It's like the
Of
size of
what
a
version? Did
thimble.
you get this version or did you get another one?
I got it on Libby and it had illustrations. It was the same Helen John illustrations, and I
Oh.
tried to find out more about her and could not find a lick.
Interesting. Because again, like I did love these illustrations as a kid.
Yeah, there I
I
found
don't
it in
even know
my
how to.
copy.
Actually, Helen John, a lot of the illustrations in the beginning of the chapters are of Papa. He's
Hot.
a handsome dude. He's very like, who would play him? Okay, like, okay, who do you think would play Papa in a movie if we were going to shoot this today?
I don't know. I want him to be Jewish because I feel like there are a lot of
I want him to
that.
be Jewish, but I also want him to be like Oscar Isaac or something.
Yeah.
It's going to be.
Maybe Leif Schreiber.
Ooh, okay.
Oh,
All right.
John Bernthal from The Walking Dead.
Oh my God. That would be crazy. I find him like, do you find actors, any certain actors that are you find like vaguely like upsetting, like in a real way where like it makes you nervous to watch them? He makes me stressed out. And I don't know why. Like maybe he's an incredible actor. Maybe
Yeah.
I'm picking up on something.
Maybe it's just like I get that sometimes. I think with that guy, I know he could kill me. Just
He could
like
kill me.
not with any intention, just physical capability. There's Zach Braff, Adam Brody.
I could see Adam Brody. Do you just look up like popular Jewish actors?
Yeah, I'm on the Wikipedia page, list of Jewish American
Oh,
entertainers.
Jason Schwartzman.
Oh, he could do great.
He would be a great papa.
He would.
And then I don't know. I am really bad at casting things, actually.
Chris
I always think I'd be
Kattan.
good, and then I blank on everybody in the whole world.
Nick Kroll.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely, Nick Kroll. I think this is like, I don't know why this was never turned into a movie. Like, this is
Yeah.
really good. And I mean, it would be good also if it would be good set in 1912. It would be good set in 1951. It would be good set in 1975. Like, this is a very, like, why did they not spin this into a bunch of movies?
Noah Weil, did you watch ER?
ER?
Yeah.
Yeah. I
Noah
mean,
Weil, who played
oh my God,
Carter?
yes. Loved him.
I do too.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
He would be great. He would be a great papa. And then we have to pick a mama, but I'm blanking on. He would be amazing, Noah Wiley.
Amber Benson, who's Tara on Buffy.
Oh yeah.
Sarah Michelle Gellar on Buffy. Allison Hannigan on Buffy. All Jewish.
Well, weirdly, I think Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze Jr., I don't know about. I think he's
Perfect.
not Jewish, but I would love to see them as a mama and papa.
I would too. I just smile whenever I think about them.
Oh yeah, Amber Benson's great. I remember her.
Natasha Lyonne.
Oh my
No.
God. Yeah, why are we not making this is I gotta look this up on my IMDb Pro. This is probably in development.
It better be. We know enough people.
Seriously, getting this made is my new reason to be in LA.
Oh, it's not public domain yet, but I wonder. Her
Gotta be
family.
soon though, right? Isn't it?
I thought it's 100 years.
When did Winnie the Pooh come out? The 20s?
I think so. Let's see. 1926.
Oh, okay.
I just know Wizard of Oz came out in 1900 and it's public domain.
Whoa! Alarm bells on IMDb Pro. All of a Kind Family is a TV series in development from the Jim Henson Company. Oh my God. Jordana Lewis Jaffe is the showrunner. I don't know who's this, Jordana Lewis Jaffe.
I'm looking anywhere. Oh, her first picture on Google is her putting on like a giant motorcycle helmet. Love it.
Well, she's from CSI. Those are all her credits.
Love CSI. There's something, there's a Google article, True Hollywood Story from Law School to Writing for TV. Today's guest is Jordana Lewis Jaffe. She's a writer.
Oh my God.
Don't
Oh
disappoint us,
my
Jordana.
God. I'm not sure what's gonna happen now.
I know. Jim Henson Company, are they going to be Muppets? They
Honestly,
probably not, but
God, I'm conflicted because part of me thinks like that's almost better. You know what I mean? Like it's such a tender, unbelievably like important story, at least to me. I think it would be a little bit dicey in terms of casting. How's it gonna go? You know how we all feel when something that we love gets turned into a movie or a show. So I'm sort of loving the idea of taking it and putting it in Muppet Land. That would be actually incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a
Secret
big
hiring.
Muppet slash puppet slash marionette fan to begin with.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Bob Baker Marionette Theater yet?
No, but I've seen videos of
You
performances.
gotta go.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I could be very into this. I cannot believe this is in, but it's one of those things where it's like it's in development and they have no information about it.
Yeah, and that
So
could
who knows?
last for 20 years.
Oh wait, okay. On Deadline, there was an article: Jim Henson Company developing drama series drama of an All of a Kind Family based on Sydney Taylor's books. That was from September 2022.
I mean, last year was a real standstill.
Whoa.
So
Okay, this is big news. Well, I mean, I'm loving this. This podcast could this episode could really spawn a lot of excitement and trending things. Very interesting. Jordana Lewis Jaffe. I have to get in touch.
know.
This is it. This is where we're going as a people in this direction. Everything. I think the hensification of everything would be great.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Well, there we go. Now I got a whole afternoon planned.
I guess the last thing I have, you answer this. Would you consider it required reading?
1,000%.
Yeah.
1,000%. As a kid, I think you should read everything, right? Like I read the
Yeah.
back of shampoo bottles and cereal boxes and everything. You know, nothing is a waste. However,
Yes.
this should not be missed. And I still want to talk to, I mean, I'm so glad that we got to do this and so people can hear about it. I still think it's wildly underread, underrated, underseen.
Absolutely.
What it did for me at a tender age in terms of exposure and curiosity and community and hearkening back to simple times and all of it is just so special and so, you know, just the implications, the sort of steadying force that it had in my entire life was like huge. I wish all little girls and boys and little whatevers to engage with it. It's super good.
Is there anything you'd like to plug as we round out where you can be found if you want to be found?
Sure, yeah. I'm working on a collection of short stories right now, which I'm kind of unveiling here and there. I don't have a good platform for it yet. I'm not sure exactly what I want to do, but in the meantime, so I'm putting that a little bit on my Instagram, but on the meantime, my artwork is always on my Instagram, which is fun and fruity and just a little bit, who knows? So yeah, if people want to come to there and check me out, it's Dear Emily Caulfield, DEAR. Like you're writing me a little letter.
Yeah, hello.
Dear Emily Caulfield is Instagram, and it's pretty much my name across anywhere. So if you want to send me an email, so you can hit me up there too.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, this is so exciting. Definitely keep in touch and let me know the books that are happening and reading. And has anybody done Sylvester and the Magic Pebble? Because I
No,
oh.
is that the one where he gets turned into a donkey?
Yeah. No, he is a donkey. His parents are donkeys, and he gets turned into a rock. And they're looking for him. Gotta
Yeah, I remember
talk
that
about
breaking my
that. And
heart.
then the series of children's books called George and Martha about two hippos.
Ooh,
Do you know them?
no,
Okay,
I'm
George
writing
and
these
Martha.
down.
That's what we're doing. We gotta talk about that for sure. They like live together, kind of Bertner. I mean, it's a boy hippo and a girl hippo, but you don't know if they're friends or are they lovers. They pr pranks on each other, but they love each other. But that's a big one. So anyway, we gotta talk books for sure.
Absolutely. And I think Sylvester was done by the same guy who did Shrek, the book that Shrek is from.
Oh, really? I think
I
it's definitely William Steig,
maybe.
right?
Okay, I could be wrong.
Hold on. Okay, first of all, wow, Google, Chrome, listening, honey. Shrek and Sylvester and the Magic Pebble immediately first two things when I wrote William. So yeah, he wrote both. And yes, the illustrations for both of them are so good.
Yeah. Thank you so much to Emily for this episode. Emily mentioned the George and Martha books about hippos. I said I didn't know it. I did know it because I watched the show, which by the way starred Nathan Lane and Andrea Martin. But I need you guys to Google George and Martha hippos because I remember these guys so vividly. And I don't have any tattoos and I don't have plans on getting any tattoos, but I want these guys tattooed on me. Especially the one, if you're on Google right now, the one where they're both wearing hats and holding hands, or they're like reaching out to hold each other's hands. That's the one I want. Next week is such a cool episode. Hopefully, I will get it out in 1 week instead of two. Did you notice this one was only out in a week? Next week, we are doing Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck. I said we were doing it this week, and then I thought, oh, do I want to edit that? I didn't care about it. My bad. Next week, we're doing Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck, and we're doing it with a friend of mine that actually went to middle and high school with me. And it's our first guest who grew up with me. I was so glad that they picked it because we read it in the same class, not just like the same year, in the same physical classroom at the same exact moment. I think it was like fifth period. Oh yeah, this is the longest postscript I've ever done, and I still need to, I have to convert it to a wave format, guys. Isn't that crazy? Okay, bye. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you next time. I'm Erin Bowles. And you can find me everywhere at Erin R. Bowles. The R stands for resuming work, adding things to that resume. Really rad people that I got to meet and work with yesterday. I had a beehive in my hair. Okay, I've said too much already. Thank you. I love you. Good night.